You're listening to Things They Don't Tell Her. Everything you don't get taught about periods, pregnancy, and postpartum. I'm going to take you on a journey back to sex ed and teach you what really matters. Ladies, it's time you felt empowered in your bodies. I'm your host, Caitlin Pender, founder of Her Women's Health, and I'm sharing tips to optimize your fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journey. Right. Good afternoon, listeners. In today's interview, I'm joined by friend and colleague, Jess Coomer. Jess is a child's health nurse and lactation consultant with over 20 years experience working in child's health clinics and pediatric hospitals across Australia. Jess has a master's in child and family health. She's a qualified lactation consultant and currently sees private clients out of coastlife families on the Sunshine Coast. Jess is an absolute wealth of knowledge, and I'm so excited to have her on the podcast today to talk all about breastfeeding. Thanks for joining me, Jess.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm so thrilled.
So to get started, could you tell us a little bit about your journey into child's health nursing and what motivated you to do your lactation consultant qualification?
Oh, absolutely. So my nursing background is in tertiary pediatric hospitals. So I've worked at Sydney Children's Hospital, the Royal Children's in Melbourne, and also what was the Mater Children's Hospital in Brisbane. And primarily I worked in pediatric ICU, neonatal ICU, and emergency in those hospitals. Which from a clinical perspective, I absolutely loved in terms of the pace and the knowledge and the teamwork. But what I struggled with was understanding what the experience of these families would be like once they were sent home. And it felt like the experience for me working in those areas was great from my personal clinical experience, but I wanted to understand a little bit more about what it was like for these families to go home and how we can support them better to thrive and grow and more from a wellness model than a acute patch them up, send them out the door kind of model. So I moved into working in the community with families, and then I started working in the Aboriginal Medical Service in Victoria with first-time mums of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander babies to support them. And then I decided to do, first of all, my graduate diploma in child and family health, and started working in child and family health on the Sunshine Coast before doing my master's. Because, you know, we have literally been having babies forever. But, you know, it's such a interesting experience, and it's unique for every person. It's unique for every baby. And there's so much that we still don't understand about the experience of motherhood and infancy and growth and development, and it's an area that for me I feel like I could spend all my time researching and learning about the whole experience of motherhood and infancy and childhood and families. And that also led me to do my lactation consultant study as well, just to again understand that piece of the puzzle and that part of the journey for a lot of mums and babies. So it's an area that I feel like I could never know and understand enough about, which is exciting for me.
Yeah, and I just love the way you integrate all of that knowledge with your lactation consulting, because as you said, it's a piece of the puzzle, and it's so beneficial to look at all of the pieces and all of the factors that could be contributing to them and their ability to thrive with their baby.
Absolutely. And I think that for me, as a lactation consultant, I feel really fortunate that I have that experience of working with families in really acute settings, and also the knowledge and understanding of optimal growth and development and how that fits into the picture of a mother-baby dyad, and then how it fits into the broader picture of their unique family. And, you know, you can keep going what that's like for them in their community, and then how the impact of where they live, and even the time, you know. And I think that particularly at the moment, understanding the impact of motherhood in a unprecedented global health pandemic, you know, you could go on and on by the broader impacts on that, just that mother-baby breastfeeding dyad. So yeah, I feel really fortunate that I have, as you say, that other knowledge to kind of bring into each lactation appointment that I have with individual mums.
Yeah, awesome. So just to get started, I want to go through things for someone who is maybe pregnant for the first time, or they're looking at starting their pregnancy journey, or maybe they're pregnant for the second time but had issues with breastfeeding the first time around. So really just on a complete basic breakdown, could you explain to me a little bit about what you believe is important to understand in pregnancy or preconception, and what can help before a woman transitions into that newborn mother around breastfeeding?
So breastfeeding is, when I talk to my clients about breastfeeding, I talk about it like a dance. So it's a experience that an individual and completely unique mum has with an individual completely unique baby. So as a woman thinking about having babies or pregnant, and thinking about whether or not breastfeeding is something that you would like to do, I think that what you can consider is your own personal circumstances. So you can consider things, you know, anatomical things. Have you had any breast surgery in the past? Is there something in your history that may, at an anatomical level, impact on your capacity to breastfeed? Have you had some challenges falling pregnant and required support around your fertility? Or were there challenges that you experienced when you were, you know, with your monthly cycles? Because breastfeeding is, and the changes that occur within the breast, particularly upon initiation of breastfeeding, are hormonally driven. So if there are, you know, we know that for women who have had challenges in terms of fertility, that they are often more likely to have some challenges with those initial phases of breastfeeding. Or in fact, when you think about your family history, did you have your sisters, aunts, did your mum have challenges breastfeeding? And also understanding what those challenges were about. Were they because perhaps the support wasn't in place, or the expectations were unrealistic? And was it at a time where health professionals were very quick to push that mother to stop breastfeeding and start giving formula? Or were there real anatomical challenges?
What would some of those anatomical challenges be?
So if you have flat or inverted nipples, if you have very little breast tissue, or if you have breasts that are quite wide spaced, that can impact on the initiation of breastfeeding, and particularly when you're breastfeeding a very small infant. Or again, as like I said, if you've had any kind of breast surgery, or back spinal surgery, because one of the the fourth intercostal nerve that runs from the nipple and is part of that cycle that tells the body there is a baby there, we need to produce and let down milk. If there has been any surgical intervention that may have impacted or damaged that nerve, then that particularly in the initial phases can impact on breastfeeding. And it's not, and when I say impact and use words like impact and challenge, that means that these things aren't insurmountable. Not to cause undue stress when there may not be a problem, but just to be aware that these things can impact on your breastfeeding journey.
Mm-hmm. And what about the genetic link? Is there...
So oftentimes when we're working with mothers who are struggling with breastfeeding for whatever reason, particularly mums who struggle with producing enough milk or letting down that milk, sometimes I'm fortunate enough to be in a consultation where there is a maternal grandmother, for example, so the mother who is the breastfeeding mother, her mum. And when we're talking about the challenges that she's having, the grandmother, may quite frequently say things like, oh yeah, it's exactly the same for me. And that's why, you know, you were formula fed, or it was the same for me. And the doctor said, you're never going to produce enough milk, so just start her on the bottle, things like that. So understanding again, is it something that perhaps at the time wasn't supported by the health professionals around, or was there a real physiological challenges there?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's fascinating because it would be hard to isolate whether there was adequate support and whether there was adequate nutrition and adequate rest and all of the factors that are needed to support breastfeeding, and whether there was a push for formula, and isolate whether all of those things or whether there was an underlying genetic link and an anatomical structural issue that may have impacted their milk production.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think quite often that is why, you know, as a lactation consultant, we need to take quite a bit of time to really talk through and understand what the real issues may have been and how that may impact on your experience if your mum had those experiences. Because sometimes you know I have worked with mums who bring their own mother in, and the grandmother, you know, is then re-experiencing grief for the breastfeeding that she wasn't able to achieve. Mm. And it may have always been, and we all have these stories within our families that we don't necessarily question, but, you know, I may have a client come in and say, oh yeah, my mum wasn't able to breastfeed. I didn't like her milk, or she never made enough milk. But then when we actually have that conversation more deeply, and often, you know, if we are lucky enough to have the grandmother there is a lot of grief over the loss of not being able to do something that she herself at the time thought that perhaps she could have done. And then there's all those things that she felt like she missed out on, and in, you know, those families, you know, family stories, they're just sort of, oh yeah, mum just couldn't breastfeed, she was never able to breastfeed me, and it was never really kind of explored any further than that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I know that my mum struggled with milk supply and struggled to breastfeed me, and same with my grandmother. So that's something I will have to dive further into.
Yeah.
And I have had lots of conversations about that. But what would you recommend if someone, for example, identifies with one of these things in pregnancy? How would you recommend finding that support and being aware, and what can they do then to really make sure that they have the best chance of supporting themselves in that journey postpartum?
I think obviously as a lactation consultant, I think that it's really important to have great professionals and supports that you feel as though you are comfortable and that perhaps you've even created a relationship with in that antenatal period while you're still pregnant, that even if it's just to come in and have a conversation and see if you can find a lactation consultant who you connect with, because it's obviously it's an incredibly personal experience. And if you're working with someone, you are, you know, spending quite a bit of time with them. So to find someone that you click with personally is really, really helpful. And to actually, again, have those conversations and make a realistic assessment of, is this something that could be impactful upon my experience? Because sometimes, you know, it's not something that will likely have an impact on your own experience. And then you can, you don't have to spend the energy worrying about that. And if it is something that may be impactful upon your experience, then you can come up with a plan together to, okay, once baby's born, these are the things that we can do to try and mitigate and get on the front foot of, rather than wait until, you know, baby's 2 or 3 weeks old and you know, you're sleep deprived and worried and feeling like you're failing and, you know, then you reach out. The other thing that I would absolutely suggest if you're in that situation is talk to your family and also think about who is going to be your support people. One of the things that we know when we're thinking about long-term, ongoing, successful breastfeeding is that it is highly impacted by the support people that the mother has around. So if you have a partner who thinks, well, I was formula fed and I'm absolutely fine, then we know that that attitude will carry on. And if things get challenging and you are struggling and we see it that mums are, because it's incredibly emotional. You know, I always have mums apologizing for crying in my clinic room, and there is nothing to apologize for. And it's an incredibly emotional time if you feel as though you are struggling with or unable to breastfeed. And what I often hear from partners is that it is just really difficult to see, and they feel incredibly helpless and unable to do anything because they don't have the goods, they don't have the breasts. And so if we have a partner who has the belief and the attitude that it's not worth it and just formula feed, then that is a conversation that can become difficult to have. And then you'll, as a mother who's wanting to breastfeed, you may feel as though you're butting up against that. So to really have those conversations and be really clear about what your values are around feeding and why you want to feed and how that person may support you is also incredibly crucial.
Which would be great conversations, I imagine, to have in pregnancy with your partner.
Absolutely.
Really establish absolutely why it is.
Absolutely, 100%.
Can you give some information on what the research says and what the values might be or the benefits to breastfeeding versus formula for someone who's, you know, completely new to this area and is pregnant and wanting to find out more information that might then create their values if they're not entirely sure what the evidence is?
Absolutely. So the evidence tells us that particularly ongoing breastfeeding that is able to that you are able to achieve after an exclusive breastfeeding, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, the health benefits for the baby are around you know, and we have to be quite careful with this kind of thing, because obviously when we're thinking about long-term health conditions, there's never one
causation.
Single thing. And so, you know, let's put a caveat on that, on this, that if people are unable to breastfeed and they do formula feed, this does not mean that your child is automatically behind or at risk in these areas. But this is what the research tells us about how breastfeeding can support health.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of risks around respiratory disease and respiratory conditions, particularly around diabetes and things like asthma, allergies, eczema, those kinds of things, that breastfeeding and long-term breastfeeding is protective
mm-hmm.
for the baby and for the infant. Obviously, we know that breast milk is incredibly clever, and it is able to be reactive and responsive to the child or the baby's environment. So what we know is that if mum and the baby are exposed to a cold, mum produces antibodies to that cold. Those antibodies are transferred into the breast milk, and the baby, what is observed is usually less symptomatic and recovers more quickly. So we know that the immune support at that level that occurs with breastfeeding is really significant. And then also in terms of gut health, you know, breast milk is better than any probiotic you will be able to buy. And, you know, we're learning and understanding more about the importance of that gut microbiome for overall health. And we know that exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months is, you know, really, really beneficial for setting up that gut microbiome. You know, the research also supports exclusive and on-demand breastfeeding to encourage that development of a baby understanding and experiencing hunger, being able to signal, I'm hungry, and then feed to a level where they're satiated and then stop. Because obviously as, you know, small children and older children and grown-ups and adults, it would be really awesome if we were able to be so in tune with our bodies that we think, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat, oh, I'm full and I'm going to stop. So we know that particularly exclusive on-demand breastfeeding is really helpful for setting up that like that feedback loop, if that makes sense. From the maternal perspective, we know that exclusive and ongoing breastfeeding almost closes the hormonal loop for us. So if you're able to, you know, when we think about recovery post-birth, it allows our hormones to fulfill that cycle, if that makes sense. So we have hormones that drive our menstrual cycles, then those hormones change when we become pregnant, then there is another change into the lactation hormones, and then as lactation then comes to its natural close and babies wean, the hormones are able to kind of close that loop, if that makes sense, rather than a quick cessation of breastfeeding directly after birth, of those lactation hormones directly after birth, and that there is some protective capacity and some protective, you know, there is some protection against things like cervical cancer and those more sort of female cancers. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Amazing. And so what advice could you give a woman who's thinking about antenatal expressing?
So we hear quite a bit about antenatal expressing. Again, if you are someone who, you know, I would, first of all, I would say it's very, very important to have good antenatal care and to be really well supported throughout your pregnancy by someone who understands your history. So again, if you know, what we know is that women start to produce and can start to leak colostrum, which is the thicker, it's the fluid that's leaked towards the end of the pregnancy before the baby is born, and it's different in the composition of breast milk. It's not like a whole food like breast milk is, but it's really, it is still really rich and beneficial for babies' tummies when they're first born. And we can, you know, some women start to leak that anything from sort of 16 weeks. Lots of women who are concerned about breastfeeding will look to antenatal expressing as something that if I do this, then this means I'll be able to breastfeed. And to a certain degree, I think that antenatal expressing can be helpful in getting to know your own breasts, because it's not something that we're particularly good at, unfortunately, as women, understanding how your breasts are changing and how they feel. And often because it's produced in such small amounts, we recommend hand expressing only to express colostrum, because that can be helpful in understanding what it feels like and actually the motion of hand expressing. It's not recommended necessarily before 36 weeks unless there is some concern that baby will need it. So babies who are born small or premature, or who are requiring additional supplementation in those early phases, benefit from having colostrum. But it's always better for women to talk to their antenatal care provider in understanding, am I at risk of this, and is this something that my baby may require? Because you know, when we're working with women who are trying to bring on labor, sometimes what is recommended is expressing, which is why we don't recommend antenatal expressing before 36 weeks. What I say is that it can be helpful in understanding and getting to know your own body. And if you have a small amount of colostrum, it can feel like a little bit of money in the bank going into giving birth. But some women find it really difficult to do, and it's certainly not something that I would say, if you are unable to do it, that it should be a cause for concern. Does that make sense?
So is there any association between antenatal expressing and ability to breastfeed?
No.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's certainly not something that I would say, in order to set yourself up for a successful breastfeeding experience, practice. Yeah, because there's just not enough evidence to say if you do this, it will be really beneficial. Things like skin on skin, you know, 60 minutes of skin on skin directly and immediately after birth. Yes, absolutely. That has very, very clear and strong links to improved breastfeeding experiences. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not as much for the antenatal expressing. Yeah.
What other things have clear links to successful breastfeeding initiation?
So supported and lack and you know, non-interventional spontaneous vaginal birth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, again, it means that the body is able to come in, it's moving into birth in a spontaneous manner, and the hormonal changes and shifts that happen that then move a mother and a woman into those lactation hormones happen naturally, and they're not being pushed. So, and less intervention. So, for example, a mother who is able to, you know, a mother who, for example, has a spinal block or has, you know, significant pain relief where they're unable to sort of then hold the baby and get the baby to the breast, that definitely, you know, impacts on their capacity to be able to, because what we're wanting in that first 60 minutes after birth is for the baby to be able to latch to the breast and not obviously get any great volumes, but just to be able to start suckling. So anything that impacts on that then has, impacts on that initiation of breastfeeding.
Okay, awesome. And what other things in the postpartum period could impact a woman's ability to breastfeed, or what are some things that a woman could look out for if she was struggling or if she was concerned in that postpartum period, and where could she get support?
Okay, so apart from the things that we've, you know, already talked about in terms of the anatomy, particularly the anatomy of the breast, so if we have flat and inverted nipples, then when we're talking about a small, you know, anatomically small infant, being able to successfully latch to the breast and get what we call a good mouthful of breast, that is obviously made more challenging when a woman has flat or inverted nipples, simply because that latch is more difficult. And so, you know, in those circumstances, obviously having some antenatal support to be able to get some personalized strategies is really, really helpful. But what I hear most often from women is understanding and the expectations around what the initiation of breastfeeding and what breastfeeding a small infant is like. I think when we haven't had a lot of contact with other mums and seeing and observing and bearing witness to those early weeks, then what we see and what we have in our mind is a very calm, quiet, you know, we see women with the breastfeeding aprons draped over them and this still baby that's just quietly, noiselessly suckling at the breast and then falls asleep and mum hasn't even noticed, and it's all very contained and demure and almost like we don't even know that it's happening. You know, that's the picture that we see if we do see breastfeeding, or, you know, in popular culture. Whereas what I say to mums when I first see them is the best breastfeeding clothes is a pair of pants. And, you know, that's certainly not what we see. And understanding again that it is a dance, and it is you know, your partner in that, your new, immature, absolutely new to the world infant doesn't really know what they're doing. And babies can be frantic when they are wanting to breastfeed. And so what, you know, and I'll never forget one mum said, I didn't realize that I was birthing this crazed demon, because baby was hungry and they were hungry. They were mouth open, they were head around, bobbing, trying to find that breast and just frantic in their efforts to breastfeed. And as mums, we need to be able to be calm and supportive. And, you know, we have a lot of, well, I see a lot of women who often feel like they've been manhandled before they've left hospital, with well-meaning health professionals trying to grab a woman's breast and, you know, get it into the baby's mouth so they can show them this is what you do when you breastfeed. And then the mum gets home and thinks, well, how many hands and arms do I need to have to be able to do this? And what I often say to women is having, you know, sitting in a comfortable seat with your tailbone back in the seat, your lower back supported, your shoulders relaxed, looking down and thinking, where is my breast hanging? Because it is extraordinary to me that we think we have a pair of breasts, and yet if you take your top off and look in the mirror, you are given two individual breasts, and often they point and hang in completely different directions. And then on day 2 to 5 when, you know, we hear about milk coming in and all of a sudden your breasts have increased in size, I have women coming in saying, I don't even know my own body anymore. This is not a pair of breasts that I have ever seen, and I don't know what to do with them, and I can't see where my nipples are because my breasts are so huge. And it all just feels very overwhelming. You feel as though you've been put in this body that you didn't, you know, that you've just woken up and you've got these quite large, full of milk, engorged breasts, and that feels quite overwhelming. And I've forgotten your original question, because this is what happens if I don't get on a little bit of a roll.
Right.
But I think having a realistic understanding of this is what it can look like, not to say that if it doesn't look exactly like this, then it's wrong, but these are the experiences that women commonly have, feeling as though they're in this body that they don't quite know what to do and with, and now they have this small person who is starving and they're not quite sure how best to help them get to the breast. And when I have women who have had a lot of differing advice and lots of clinicians putting their hands on their breasts in order to get their nipple in the right position so they can shove the baby on, it all just feels very overwhelming when they get home.
I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of how they could then, so adjusting expectations, so yes, that they understand that it might not, especially in that first transition to breastfeeding, be a beautiful, calm experience of baby easily sucking to the breast. So having a realistic expectation of the things that might come up and that it will be an experience or a journey. And
absolutely.
Is there other things that they, if there is for some reason difficulty breastfeeding, other things that they might be able to look out for, or is that when you would recommend they initiate contact with someone like yourself?
Yes, I absolutely would recommend if there is any concern that mum is struggling or baby is struggling or the dyad, the mother-baby dyad, is not working in the way that you would like it to, absolutely I would recommend reaching out, because as I said, there are very basic tips and tricks that we talk about. Like I was saying, making sure you've got a comfortable seat, understanding where your breasts are hanging, supporting baby so that they're able to breastfeed in an aligned position so that their head is straight and snug in at the body. You know, all of these ways to kind of position baby. But oftentimes, if there are challenges, those challenges are very unique to that mum and that baby. So the other thing that we do when we do a breastfeeding assessment is we assess baby. We look at babies. We assess baby overall. Was there something that happened in the birth that makes it more difficult for baby to turn their head one way or the other? We look at the baby's oral structures. We look at the baby's tongue and we make that assessment. And then we look at what does it look like when that mother picks the baby up and attempts to put them to the breast? Where are the challenges? Is it that we have a very, very hungry baby who mum is trying, has heard that, oh, okay, baby now needs to feed every 2 hours. So I'm going to wait till it's been closer to 2 hours and then baby is just completely frantic and unable to attach to the breast? Or is there something in the birth story that is impactful on the baby being able to, in a settled manner, get to the breast? What's happening with mum's milk supply? At what day after birth did mum's milk sort of come in? And we talk about, you know, when did you feel that engorgement and what did it feel like and what did your nipples look like? Each experience is very, very individual, and often I will have women who, you know, they come in for an hour's appointment, but, you know, at the end of that we have an at home and unique to them and their baby, and they go away and they feel more comfortable. But and after every appointment, I always offer the capacity for a follow-up appointment, because once they, you know, once a mum goes home and starts to try and implement those strategies at home, there is invariably questions. Oh, what did you say about that? Oh, actually, when I get home, this is the seat that's most comfortable to sit in. Someone's given me this breastfeeding pillow. It doesn't feel like it fits. You know, all of those little things, those little tweaks can make a big, big difference when you are recovering from pregnancy and birth, extremely emotional and just wanting to be able to feed your baby more than anything else. And then you have a baby who is hungry and crying and not particularly calm when they're going to the breast. So all of those little things can feel huge and overwhelming. And so having the capacity for not only seeking support and understanding what the plan is, but what then happens when I go home and I have questions tomorrow, tonight, the next day, in a week. Mm-hmm. Having an understanding of, okay, how do I seek that ongoing support?
Yes, so much wisdom in that. And because if they've been discharged from the hospital, I imagine that a lot of women are struggling to find that ongoing support and looking at Dr. Google.
Absolutely. And you know that Dr. Google is a rabbit warren that seems to have no depth. It just goes on and on and on. And there are, you know, someone said to me the other day, a dad in a consultation, do you feel like you say the same thing over and over again? Do you ever get sick of doing the same thing? And whilst a lot of the advice I give is very, very similar, there is no way I feel as though I could get sick of giving advice to mums and babies, because there is no two mum and baby the same. And so even if you see a similarity in some ways to an experience of someone that you know, or someone that you've read about, or someone that you've seen on Instagram, there will absolutely be, you know, hundreds of other elements that are completely unique to you and your baby. And that needs to be taken into account. And that's just not something that the internet yet has the capacity to do.
Yeah.
I rarely have a mum who comes and says, actually, you know what? I Googled it and it made me feel so much better.
It's not the
way it works.
It's a new mum's worst enemy, up in the middle of the night with her phone looking for anyone that will give her advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then you are plagued by programs and devices, and the thing that if you just buy this, then it will allow your baby to be settled and all will be well with the world.
Marketing.
Absolutely.
Amazing. So I just want to sum up what I've taken from what we've spoken about today, because there's so much wisdom in what we've spoken about. The first thing is establishing that connection. If you are concerned in pregnancy, or if you do have some of those risk factors, can be really valuable, so that you can, one, know that you've got a support network or a supportive person that you connect with, and that's there ready to go in the event that anything does happen in the postpartum period where there's difficulties or where you are in need of a little bit of extra emotional support and professional advice. Mm-hmm. That antenatal expressing could be a great way for a woman to connect with her body and her breasts and her nipples, and to maybe experience a sensation of colostrum expressing, and to collect a little bit of colostrum, but is no way linked to breastfeeding success postpartum. The things that would impact initiation of breastfeeding are more likely and spontaneous, natural, non-intervention birth and early skin-to-skin contact.
Mm-hmm.
And that postpartum advice needs to be unique to the mum and baby dyad, and that information can't be sourced necessarily from Google, and a supportive network and environment is really important so that we can feel supported and get individually tailored advice, and that a woman could perhaps adjust her expectations so that the expectation isn't that it will be, even though it is a physiological event, a naturally occurring thing, much like sex is a naturally occurring event. It doesn't mean the first time that we have sex it's going to be beautiful and easeful.
Absolutely. I love that analogy. Perfect.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, it just sounds like sex, even though it's a beautiful, naturally occurring event, it is by no means easy the first time around.
Absolutely. And there's no rainbows and hallelujahs that necessarily happen. And the more we do it, the better we get at it.
That's right. Yeah. And there's nothing reading magazines and looking at things beforehand is not necessarily going to set you up for success, because it's a dance between two individuals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that so much. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I'd say it's a very similar dance to the breastfeeding journey. It's two individuals with complete unique anatomy coming together, yes, and learning to interact. So
absolutely.
Beautiful analogy.
Completely agree.
To finish off, do you have any last pieces of wisdom or advice, or even things that you wish you knew when you were pregnant that you'd like to share?
So when I had my first child, I had a master's in child health and I was a lactation consultant, and I thought, surely with all of this I will be able to nail this part of parenting. And that was when I discovered that we are not given a pair of breasts, but we are in fact given two individual breasts, which, as I said, can hang in different ways and sit up in different ways and have different challenges. And I think learning that I needed to take time to get to know my baby and get to know myself and get to know how we fitted together. Because when I, you know, I was incredibly fortunate with my birth that it was a natural, no intervention, spontaneous vaginal birth, and he came to the breast within the first 20 minutes and suckled beautifully, and I thought, yes, okay, we are home. But I required a lot of support to adjust my expectations of myself and how I thought I was failing and failing him. I was fortunate enough that I had a wonderful colleague who was a lactation consultant and a child health nurse, and she was able to come and visit me at home, because there was no way I was getting out of that house, particularly not with a top on, and who knew when he was going to be able to feed. And yeah, the first couple of weeks were frantic. And so to readjust my expectation that if the only thing I achieve in the first 12 weeks is, you know, nourishing my baby, learning how to go easy on myself and developing an understanding of how our patterns can fit together in terms of when he wants to feed and how I support him in that way. And, you know, wearing a very new and deep groove in my couch as I sat there feeding and feeding and feeding and feeding. That was how I had to readjust my expectations of what I was going to be able to achieve in those early weeks and months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm now one of those smug people that says I look back on that time with emotion, because it was beautiful as I now have a 5-year-old who tries to interrupt me whilst I am speaking to you. And yeah, you do never ever get that time back, but it was incredibly challenging, and I only got through it because I had fantastic support around me, not because I had all the knowledge and all the plans and I knew how to do it, but because I had really, really great people around me who were able to provide me with support. For sure.
Amazing. Yes, we can't undervalue that. So just to finish off, can you just let all of the listeners know how they can find you, the different packages that you offer, and what, how they can establish that connection with you during pregnancy and then postpartum?
You said at the top, I work out of Coast Life Families, and I have established a baby and child health clinic with a wonderful colleague of mine, Jane, who is a neonatal nurse practitioner. If you contact Coast Life Midwifery via phone, they can make appointments with us. They're absolutely available for us for antenatal child health appointments. All of my appointments are an hour. Concerns. We also have a drop-in service there with a set of scales. Happy to have a chat with you, or you can speak to reception and we will give you a call back. We are able to offer what we call a discovery call, which is a 15-minute free okay. Talk about what your concerns might be, and some strategies that we might be able to put in place, and a little bit of a plan for you, and also to see whether a consultation with me is something that you feel as though would be beneficial. So if you look on the Coast Life Families website, you will be able to click on a link that takes you to the phone number that you can make that appointment. Or if you contact us via Instagram, we can get back to you and schedule that appointment. Yeah, those are probably the best ways to get in contact with us.
Yeah. And can you just talk about the package that you do offer as well for postpartum mums?
Absolutely. So we, thank you. So we do offer individual one-off appointments, but we also offer a 12-month package where you would have me in your life for a whole 12 months. So we would do the regular growth and developmental checks. Generally, what we recommend, so if we see women who are being discharged from their obstetric or midwifery service at 6 weeks, we would have a catch-up then. Then 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, and then we would see you monthly for growth and developmental checks. But also in that time, during that whole 12-month period, I am available on the phone, generally via text message, because that's just the easiest way to, when you're a new mum, to any advice that you might need. So I get lots of questions and queries about, oh, this is a funny rash, what do you think? Or this is the poo that my baby's just done, it's a different color or consistency to what it's been. Get lots of poo pictures on my phone. And this is the, you know, particularly in those early breastfeeding weeks, I sometimes have women sending me videos of, you know, holding the phone up whilst baby's breastfeeding. Does this sound and look okay? This is the way my breast looked after. This is the way my nipple looked after a breastfeed. Anything and everything, any questions you may have, anything that you would probably type into Google, I say to my clients, you know, switch off from Safari, send me a text message. Yeah. So oftentimes with the package, those initial weeks, particularly if a mom is breastfeeding, is all about establishment of breastfeeding, and that supporting baby's feeding and growth. And then as time goes on over that year, we get to talk about development and play and introducing solids and how to best support baby to grow and develop in the most optimal way, and what it feels like to become a mum and what it feels like to grieve the person that you were before you became a mum, despite the fact that it's wonderful. It is the biggest, one of the biggest transitions that we experience. And yeah, so as a lactation consultant and child health nurse, I get the privilege of supporting women and families through all of those ups and downs.
That is just absolutely amazing. And the emotional support that you provide is absolutely priceless. So cannot recommend your services highly enough. Sign me up.
Very, very kind. Oh, I can't wait. I'm not pushing, but I tell you what, I'm completely up to you in terms of the timing of your life, Caitlin, but I will be there. You just try and keep me away.
All right. So thank you for all our listeners, and thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jess. I'll link all of those details in our show notes and how all of the pregnant women can get in contact with you to establish that connection in pregnancy and then that ongoing support postpartum.
Oh, thank you so much, Caitlin. As I said, it's a real privilege. What you do is extraordinary, and I'm absolutely delighted to be asked to be on your wonderful podcast. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this with other pregnant women or other women that you think deserve to understand this information. It is my mission to share this knowledge with women because this is something that I believe that we should all be taught.